Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for joining us today. My name is Andrea Robles, and I'm from the Office of Research and Evaluation at the Corporation for National Community Service. Our office's objectives are to support our agency's mission by building knowledge on civic engagement, volunteering, and national service. We conduct in-house research, but also fund research through competitive grants to researchers, scholars, and dissertators at institutions of higher education, and support research and evaluation of our programs and grantees. Our webinar series is one way we share our ongoing research and findings. Today, we are very excited to host another research and evidence webinar titled Using Evidence for Scaling Community-Based Interventions That Work, Perspectives from the Field. As we did in June of last year, we are very excited to welcome members from the Federal Evidence and Evaluation Community of Practice, who are both in the audience and online today. So thanks for coming and listening. This webinar is part of a larger series of workshops organized by federal agencies in partnership with the OMB Evidence Team as part of the Evidence and Evaluation Community of Practice. They aim to have one event per month and always post live afterwards on the Community Max page. And if you are if you work for a federal agency and are interested in hosting an event or would like to learn more about the Community of Practice, please reach out to Erica Fulisky. And her email is on one of the slides right now. So again, thanks for coming, and I'm glad everyone's back to work. Before we begin, we'd like to cover a few housekeeping items for Adobe Connect, and I'll pass it to Emily.
All right, thank you everyone for your patience with Adobe Connect. We want to let you know that this webinar will be recorded and posted online following the presentation. Unlike previous webinars, there is no dial-in phone line. All audio is broadcast over the internet using your computer's speakers. All participants will also be in listen-only mode throughout the presentation, but you can ask questions at any time by using the chat box below. As we mentioned earlier, this webinar is being recorded, and if you have any questions or if you experience technical difficulties, please let us know in the chat box, and we will send you a personal message to troubleshoot. I believe that takes care of all those housekeeping items.
Okay, thanks, Emily. So our format today will be as follows. I will now pass this to Dr. Mary Hyde, who's the Director of Research and Evaluation, Dr. Lee Zanyapour, who's a Research and Evaluation Manager, and Anthony Narino, Research Analyst, all at CNCS, who will provide some context around scaling and then introduce the speakers. We will hear presentations from five CNCS grantees about their experiences scaling program models and have a brief concluding remark from Dr. Hyde. Then we will open the discussion for Q&A. During the webinar, please feel free to ask questions or provide comments in the chat box, and we will get to them during the Q&A. So I'm now going to hand this over to Dr. Mary Hyde.
Thanks, Andrea, and welcome to today's webinar. I just wanted to put this in a bit of a larger federal context for folks today. I think hopefully everyone knows that using data and evidence for decision making continues to be a bipartisan priority for the federal government. The most recent example of this priority can be found in the recently signed Foundations for Evidence-Based Policymaking Act of 2018. Included in this Foundation Act is a set of evaluation and evidence building activities in Title I that asks federal agencies to engage in a number of activities, including scaling evidence-based interventions. Today, we're going to focus on one of the important ways we can use evidence to inform our decisions within the federal context, and we're going to hear about folks who take evidence-based programs and practices and expand them across communities so that more people can benefit from what works. Specifically, here at CNCS, we have a number of examples of how AmeriCorps grantees have been taking evidence-based programs and bringing them to scale in their communities. We're going to hear directly today as part of our third webinar in our scaling series directly from folks who have actively been engaged in implementing this notion of scaling evidence-based practice. So we're going to hear a little bit about their firsthand experiences about the evidence intervention that they have, but also some of the challenges and opportunities that are presented by taking these sort of things to scale. For those who are interested or may have already joined us for the two prior webinars, again, this is the third in a series on this topic. The first one sort of framed this notion and how we at CNCS are sort of examining and learning about scaling evidence-based interventions. The second one really talked about a program that has been scaled based on continuing evidence that is built around its effectiveness. And today we're going to hear a variety of perspectives. So it's going to be, I think, a really informative conversation. And with that, I'm going to pass it on to Anthony Noreno to introduce today's speakers.
Thank you very much, Mary. One of the things that we have been thinking about as we engage in this project, and the project is something that we've been working with a contractor on, our contractor Mathematica, has helped to unpack what goes into scaling. What are the key components? What are the variants? What are the ways that grantees can look at their program? And scaling naturally follows from the demonstration of some evidence base for impact. So in thinking about that and in thinking about how we can bring effective solutions to different communities, we thought it'd be interesting to look at, or informative to look at, how does scaling take place? Where might it take place with ease? Where might there be challenges? What are the things that are going on that would facilitate or impede this process? In the contract that we have now, some of the deliverables that we've received, and there will be at some point six documents that lay out guidance for scaling for grantees. These will also be important for funders, foundations, and different groups that are interested in strengthening their impact. But before we release those, before they go through our clearance process, we thought it would be interesting to have a conversation with our programs that have demonstrated strong evidence. In the process of selecting these, we found five that met these criteria who have been evaluated and have been looking at and enacting scaling in their work. So today's webinar is really going to be a presentation followed by what we hope to be a very vigorous conversation, opening up these individuals for questions so that they may guide what you do. These are folks that are very skilled in this, and we hope that they will bring you some information and some insight. We think, as we move through this process, that experiential learning and the development of guidance and the development of technical assistance is going to be very helpful for all of our grantees. This webinar is a step in that process. So, as we go forward, we'd like to ask the panel if they would address three basic questions in their brief presentation, and these would include, what did you do to get evidence, and what drove your decision to scale, knowing that the on-the-ground circumstances are very important in that decision. What are the critical preparatory steps you have to take for your organization to support scaling, and what were the key challenges, and what have you learned from effective scaling? Today's panel is going to include Laval Brewer, former executive director of PlayWorks, Lara Dreyer, senior manager of federal initiatives for College Possible, Sadie O'Connor, managing director, Reading and Math, Adam Maurer, HR consultant for Citizen Schools, and Dean Ellison, chief knowledge officer for Reading Partners. With that, I would like to pass it on to Laval, and we can begin the conversation.
Good morning. My name is Laval Brewer, and I'm the former executive director for PlayWorks in Southern California. PlayWorks is a national nonprofit that works at elementary schools around the country to bring safe and healthy play to every child. They do that, but through bringing play through recess. And that recess time actually ends up changing the system and the impacts that are happening on school campuses on a daily basis. We do that through three very formalized programs. One is our coach program, where a staff person is who's hired by PlayWorks and often is an AmeriCorps member, is placed at a school every day, all day for the entire school year. And they help to transform the recess time and also to bring the value of games and play to children in that school. The second opportunity is where we partner with a school, and we have a staff person who's actually working with four schools. And that staff person works with that school every day for a week throughout the entire year. And they have four schools that they're working with. And then our final way that we make this work now is by training schools to do this work, to create systems change so that they can have safe and healthy play at their school, thus changing their school climate and increasing social emotional learning during the playtime. So what did we learn? How did we come to this decision? We also started a Stanford Mathematica controlled study back in 2013. In that, we were able to confirm that our theory of change gave us the ability to scale outside of our own footprint and our own ability to do this work ourselves. So 20 years ago, when we started doing this work, we thought, well, we'll place an AmeriCorps member or a caring, consistent adult, which is part of our theory of change, at a school campus, and they will change the school climate through recess, and children will have greater play. What we began to realize was that we wanted every child to have safe and healthy play in the United States, and that our current theory of change and our current evidence said that we can do this by actually helping schools to have that safe and healthy play process, to take our theory of change and not say that we can deliver this ourselves, but that schools who have these caring, consistent adults and who have a system for making this work happen can actually do it themselves. So what we did was we tested it out. So we do a lot of evaluation at Playworks. We evaluate every year. We ask principals what they think. We talk to students. We talk to schools. We talk to school partners. So we use a lot of evaluation to help us make decisions. So as we were moving forward in this process, we thought, are we actually achieving our vision? Are we actually helping every child in America have safe and healthy play? Or are we just having safe and healthy play at the schools that we currently have partnerships with and we're happy with our current impact? We realized we weren't happy with our current impact, and that what we really wanted was to achieve the actual vision, and that we would use our theory of change and the evidence that we've had on how to create safe and healthy plays in schools, and we would bring that to schools around the country, and that we would actually unleash schools to have this ability to do this work themselves. So if we were doing it ourselves and we were to keep it in ourselves and we were the ones that are making this happen, we would have incremental change, we would have impact, but we wouldn't change the system. And our evidence told us that the system would be changed even if we weren't the person doing it. So how do we do that? So we had to say, well, how do we go about changing our system? How do we go about growing and scaling, not just having impact? In other words, not going from 10 to 20, but how do we go from one location to five locations? How do we actually scale up in different places? So we began to say, how do we test this? So the first thing we need to do is we need to figure out if our AmeriCorps funding in our local locations could expand to new locations outside of where we currently were. And in that case, it was in our metro. Can we get outside the metro? Can we get into new spaces? So I'm in California. We were thinking, are there two places in California that we can grow that made sense for us to expand and scale so that we would have greater conversion within those spaces? We chose Riverside and San Bernardino, and we chose San Diego. So my role and responsibility was to go out and study those geographic locations to determine if the theory of change that we had and the school partners that existed in those spaces would be a good fit for us to do a test and to do a pilot to see if this would actually work by expanding our reach and expanding outside of our actual reach. The second thing we did was we said, what are our actual outcomes? What do we want to desire to have happen in these locations so that we could keep real clear what our actual goal was, and that goal would stay connected to the theory of change, that we wouldn't just scale and grow in order for scale and growth, but we would scale and grow in order for us to continue to implement the theory of change, and that we would stay within the evidence we know is working well. Thank you for moving that forward. So we did that work, and we started to go out and actually test that. So we did small tests in San Diego, and we did a small test in Riverside. And we found that the Riverside test was more productive than the San Diego test, and that threw us off, because San Diego is the second largest school district in California, and Los Angeles has the largest school district in California. We thought it would be similar. And what we determined was that by doing the preparatory work, we would see that there is a different space in the scaling, and we had to work through that process. So the final thing, what were the challenges? So the challenges we found and what we determined in scaling is not easy work. You have to plan, you have to create your outcomes, you have to test small, and then you have to evaluate that test against your outcomes, not against how you feel, but what are the outcomes? You actually get the outcomes you were deciding. And then you will go to a small pilot. And then you could take this pilot and you can expand that pilot across the country. That's what's currently happening right now. So in scaling, you really need to take your time. You need to determine what you can do. And you can also have to determine if you have the team members, in our case, the AmeriCorps members, who could actually do the work with the leadership team we had in place. Thank you.
Thanks, Lavelle. My name is Laura Dreyer, and I am the Director of Federal Partnerships at College Possible. College Possible supports students from low-income backgrounds who are pursuing a college degree. And in our flagship model, students start with us doing programming as juniors in high school, and they're paired with a near-peer AmeriCorps coach every year until they graduate from college. And so that is our flagship model. We operate that in 6 metro areas around the country. And a couple of years ago, we launched a new program called Catalyze. Catalyze serves students who are first generation and from low-income backgrounds who are already in college. Many of these students may have participated in a college access program while they were in high school, but many of those programs don't offer continued support through college degree attainment, even though this is a group of students that has dramatically lower graduation rates than their higher income peers. So our Catalyze coaches are embedded on college campuses, supervised by college staff, and they're implementing the College Possible curriculum. And the idea is that this model has the potential to allow us to serve exponentially more students more quickly than if we were continuing to just expand our flagship program into more states and regions. That process, expanding the flagship program, is extremely resource intensive since it requires us to build a whole staff to support the operations. So we are working to scale our Catalyze program. So we'll talk a little bit about how we came to that conclusion. The first thing we looked at was our own internal data. That initially drove us to the realization that support through college graduation was critical. We actually started as a college access only program, so we worked with students only until they graduated from high school. And what we found when we started tracking student progress beyond high school was that our students weren't seeing the success we wanted once they got to college. So that led us to developing the college success component of our flagship program. We also turned to national data helping us decide how or whether to scale. So there's a lot of data out there. I'm sure many of you are familiar with it. Georgetown reports that there are 240,000 low-income students that graduate from high school every year who are college ready but who don't enroll. In addition to that, high-income students are significantly more likely to earn a college degree than students in the lowest income quartile. And there is a lot of economic data that demonstrates the increasing importance of having post-secondary credentials to sustain our workforce needs. So in our flagship program, we're serving about 3,000 high school students every year, which is, we think, a critical service to those students, but it's a drop in the bucket in terms of the scope of the problem nationally. And so we wanted to figure out a way to serve a lot more students really quickly. So that is part of what drove us to explore how our services might integrate into existing infrastructures that already exist on college campuses rather than continuing to build something from scratch. And then another part of our decision hinged on sustainability. Our Catalyze model requires campuses to make an investment in the program, which reduces our reliance on grants to ensure that we can continue the program and sustain it financially. So ultimately, we found that our college success program was the component of our program that was the most scalable in terms of resource investment, and it was also the greatest need in terms of solving the problem that we refer to as the degree divide, the difference in degree attainment between high-income and low-income students. So in terms of preparation for scaling, we learned some valuable lessons when we were expanding our flagship program into new cities and high schools around building relationships and buy-in before entering a new market. So there was a lot of energy spent in listening sessions with various colleges and universities to ensure that the program that we were designing was a program that they would value. And while all colleges and universities, of course, want their students to graduate, there's a risk of folks feeling defensive or territorial if our approach appears to duplicate services they already provide. So we wanted to be really careful about that. The other thing that we've done is really build out a robust staff to support it, which includes bringing in people with corporate and marketing backgrounds, as well as nonprofit expertise. And this has really allowed us to help articulate the value proposition to the institutions, which I will admit is a different mindset and skill set than many of us nonprofit lifers might have in our tool belt. So that has been really valuable. You may not be able to see the details of the visual on this slide, but it's really just a visual representation of the business case that we're making for the program. So in terms of challenges that we've faced, I would say they fall into two main categories. Because our Catalyze program is more decentralized than our flagship programming, and the day-to-day management and supervision is done by campus staff instead of College Possible team members, there are just some really basic challenges around building the infrastructure to ensure that we continue to have really strong grant compliance. So those of you on the call who are have had host sites forever, that is nothing new to you. You've been doing that probably since day one. But for us, it's a relatively new model to embrace, and so it's been a learning curve as we figure out how not to support members directly, but how do we support their supervisors. And then I would say more fundamentally, that decentralized model also means, for better or worse, that the campus staff feel more ownership of the program. And so in some cases, that means that they want to change things about the model, and we have to decide what elements of our program are critical and require fidelity, and where we think there's room for campus-specific modifications. So a really simple example of this is one of our partners who wanted to provide coaching only to first-year students, whereas our model at its core continues to coach students through graduation. So we had a lot of discussions about whether that was an area we felt we could flex in, and ultimately we worked with the campus so that our coaches could still support students through graduation, but we focused our recruitment efforts heavily on first-year students so we could help the campus ensure that those students weren't falling through the cracks. So that's just a little bit about our experience, and I will then turn it over to the next presenter.
Good afternoon. My name is Sadie O'Connor. I am the Managing Director at Reading in Math, Inc., and Reading Corps is one of the AmeriCorps programs that we administer. So Reading Corps is a tutoring program that places AmeriCorps members into either preschools or elementary schools with the goal to help students become proficient readers by the end of third grade. In our preschool program, our tutors are placed into a classroom, and they're working with all of the students in the classroom throughout the day, providing some one-to-one support, small group support, and even classroom-wide support to help those students acquire the literacy skills that they need to be successful for kindergarten. In our K-3 model, in our elementary schools, a tutor is placed into the elementary school, and they're really providing one-on-one 20-minute intervention sessions with students throughout the day. So they have a caseload of students that have been identified as being at risk that they're working with every day of the week. We have what I articulated on the slide as sort of what we consider to be three pillars of our program. Evidence-based literacy interventions that are used consistently by all of our tutors. Data-based decision-making is really integral in looking at assessment and making changes to the interventions or the instruction that's happening to make sure we're meeting individual student needs. And then providing on-site coaching for all of the tutors so that they get immediate feedback about their tutoring, and we're ensuring fidelity to the model. In our 16-year history that Reading Corps has existed, we've scaled from being 24 AmeriCorps members in a few locations to now having more than 1,500 and 600-plus locations throughout the state of Minnesota and is replicated in 12 states. So the first question is, what did we do to get our evidence, and what really drove our decision to scale? And what you're seeing right now is a visual of how we think about how we build evidence within Reading Corps. And it starts with establishing promise and then moving into refining and evaluating moving into scaling and improving, and then moving into continuous improvement. And when I started reflecting and thinking about these questions about building evidence and reflecting back to our earlier years as we were just getting started, I thought about the establishing promise and how important those two key questions really were to help give us a really solid foundation that helped us build our evidence and then ultimately scale. So those two key questions, is the program model stable? One of the things that we did early on was engage literacy experts in helping us design and develop what the model looked like. So right now, or right at the beginning, we looked to the research base to help us determine what interventions we would really use. And so we defined interventions and assessment, a training program that could really be consistently applied across the whole program with all of our tutors. And then is it promising? We had a legislator that was initially gave us some seed money to get started, and one of the things that she said was, right at the get-go, this has to produce results. If it produces results, we'll continue to consider funding it. So that was really baked into what we did right at the outset, was conducting evaluations, not large-scale evaluations, but small analysis that it enabled us to show that we were making an impact and had some promise. And then what drove our decision to scale? I think it's pretty simple. For us, it was really demand from our school partners. We did offer it to any school in Minnesota that was interested in it. And principals started to talk to each other and they could see the results that the program was having with their own students, we were starting to get more demand from school districts and schools. We're also getting more demand from legislators because we were starting to secure more state funding. And also demand from the philanthropic world. So the next question is, what was critical prep work that we did and how we are really supporting scale up? I think on the outset, like I described earlier, the essential elements of our model were really clear. We got really clear about that right in the beginning. We wanted to make sure that the same model was used in all of our schools. So if you went to a school that was, in northern Minnesota, close to Canada, you went to a school in the Twin Cities and you maybe went to one in southern Minnesota, you'd see our AmeriCorps members delivering the same things, the same interventions, the same assessments. They're all trained in the same way. So that really allowed us to have a really stable theory of change. The second thing is that these early results helped to prove that our model was effective. We did some really pretty low-cost matched sample analysis for 5 consecutive years as we were just getting started. And that really was helpful to show that the impact that we were having was strong. And it was a low-cost thing to provide some early results. The third thing is then finding people who influence resources. People who care about funding and implementing programs that work and who were also interested in this issue of third grade reading. Obviously, resources are essential to scale, so finding those people, whether it's in the philanthropic community, the education system, school district leaders, our state funding, our state legislators, people who care about scaling what works and nurturing those relationships with them. Getting them out to see our program in action, talking to our tutors, talking to our principals, talking to the teachers, so that they could become early adopters. And then the fourth thing is just the constant refinement of our operational systems, which has just been 16 years in the making. So as our program has grown, always rethinking how we're doing things to be efficient and effective and providing a good experience for our AmeriCorps members. So this is a really small example, but think about a sign-in process for a training. If you have a group of 30 members or 50 members, pretty easy to have paper sign-in sheets. if you have 1,500 members coming to a training, paper sign-in sheets are no longer effective or efficient. So something like that, moving to scanned barcodes with name badges, is just a small example of the types of operational systems that just have to change as we've grown and scaled. And then finally, key challenges and what we've learned about effective scaling. It's hard to isolate these to just a few. We've learned so much over the years about what it takes to scale. But a few things that really came to mind, the first being thinking about a statewide infrastructure. We started Reading Corps, and all of our staff were housed in the Twin Cities, in our office in the Twin Cities. But we were really serious about reaching all parts of Minnesota and being able to provide a good experience to those schools. And so at a certain point in our history, we decided to open up regional offices so that we could have staff located throughout the state that could really directly support the AmeriCorps members in the schools. And so now today we have 7 regional offices throughout Minnesota. And now as we're scaling nationally, we also have offices in our other locations. The second thing is just thinking about a system for student data management. When we first started, we were using sort of an off-the-shelf system for our student data that produced graphs and had some really nice capabilities. But as our program grew and our needs became more unique and we had more desire to be able to export the data files and manipulate and, you know, think about how we're using that data, we were just finding the off-the-shelf product really wasn't meeting our needs anymore. So we did make a decision to invest in building our own student data management system that was completely customized for our program, which just allows us to have better access to our data, which is useful for us at the, you know, evaluation level, but also really at the ground level for our tutors and coaches. And the third, of course, as all of you are aware, scaling and operating programs obviously requires financial resources, so just that constant attention.